And good afternoon. You're listening to Unusual Sources here on 93.3 CFMU FM. Of course, this is our end of year program, but we have very serious issues. It's not a quiet time for reflection because the first major issue we're going to be discussing on our program today is indeed the crisis in Gaza. And we have on the line with us today Jennifer Lowenstein. And, of course, Jennifer is a columnist for Counterpunch as one of her many hats because, in fact, Jennifer is Associate Director of the Middle East Studies Program at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And also, she has experience working and living in Lebanon, Israel, and Palestine for a number of years. So she's very familiar with the issues on the ground. So we're very pleased to have her on the line with us today. Let's see if the connection is working. Jennifer, are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. It's working. Okay. That's not always the case. But we're very glad to have you with us today. Again, we caught your article in Counterpunch, I believe it was just a day or two ago, but you've been doing more writing on that because you have a lot of information, a lot of contacts, and a lot of firsthand knowledge of what's going on in Gaza, what's happened so far and in the past. I just wanted to say you wrote a very captivating, riveting account of what it's like there right now on the ground and also what the initial bombing was like. And I just thought our listeners should know a bit about that because it hasn't been fully expressed in the media, just what it was like to experience that initial bombardment. I was wondering if you could tell us from what you know what it would have been like to have been there when that bombing started.
Well, let me say at first, because obviously I'm in Madison, Wisconsin and not in Gaza, that my sources are in Gaza, that because I lived there for a number of months in 2002, and I've returned almost every year since. I stay close to events there pretty much on a daily, weekly basis. And when all of this happened, the first thing I did was to call up close friends to find out from them if they were safe, first of all, and what on earth was going on around them. And it was their collective descriptions and their sadness and their passion and their anger at what's happening that inspired me to write the most recent article that I've written. You know, it's very difficult to put in words for people who haven't seen it just how serious, how desperate the conditions in the Gaza Strip are today. It's winter there. Just because it's the Middle East doesn't mean it doesn't get cold. And there is no electricity, no heat, no cooking gas, no fuel for automobiles. There's no water. Water isn't pumped to the upper floors of apartment buildings. There is insufficient food. There are no milk products in the stores now. There are insufficient medical supplies in the pharmacies. The hospitals are ill-equipped. They have had to ask hundreds of the wounded to leave the hospitals in order to make room for people who are more seriously wounded. And for those people, they don't often have the requisite equipment to care for them properly. Some are being evacuated to Egypt. Unfortunately, I think the vast majority of critical injuries are either going to die or live by some miracle outside of modern medicine.
Well, indeed, there had been cutoff of aid, cutoff of resources, medical equipment, food, and other supplies into Gaza. And you described how this is a sort of on and off process, how it seems...
Yeah, I don't mean to cut you off, but you see, this was when people describe what's going on and we get a reaction of disbelief or indignation, it's very interesting to me because, in fact, it was Dov Weisglass, who was a former advisor to Ariel Sharon, who said very explicitly, not long ago, 2005, just after the disengagement, that we will put the Gazans on a starvation diet, basically, until they change their mind about who they elected into power. And they've done that, so that every time you get to the brink of a humanitarian catastrophe in the Strip, the Israelis will open up the crossings and let in a few trucks with humanitarian aid trickle in, sometimes 19 or 20, where 200 or 300 were going in the past. And this will, this will sustain people on a bare, minimal level of survival, and until it gets to a critical mass again and the crossings are once again opened. It's a very, I think, very sadistic way of dealing with a collective population of 1.5 million people, 750,000 of whom are children.
Now, how large is the Gaza Strip in terms of size in square mileage, roughly?
Well, it is about 26, 27 miles long, and at its widest, I don't think more than 5 miles wide. I think less than that, 4 miles. It is the single most densely populated area of land on the earth. And so when Israeli spokespeople talk about having civilians go somewhere else while they're doing their bombing day and night, it beggars the question where they are supposed to go to, especially since Gazans are not allowed to leave the Gaza Strip, and, of course, people on the outside are not allowed to enter the Gaza Strip. That, in fact, is a very serious point, because we are not today getting international reports of the kind that we need, because more than 400 journalists have been banned from the Gaza Strip.
Or shot at.
Yeah, basically.
You mentioned the difficulty of getting out of Gaza. There's really nowhere to go when the bombs start falling. But you had mentioned the timing of the assaults. You believe that when those bombs happened, it was at a particular time where it would have caught a lot of civilians.
Yes. The first bombings hit at 11:20 a.m. on Saturday morning, December 27th. That is, in the Gaza Strip, probably one of the busiest times of the day. Schools, elementary and secondary, primary and secondary schools are changing shifts. People are about to go out on lunch breaks or on errands. And when these bombs hit, they hit the center, the middle of Gaza City. It's a hugely populated city. They destroyed schools, police headquarters. Later on, the Islamic University buildings, metal workshops, and, of course, family homes. This was designed to cause the maximum number of casualties, and that is a near direct quote from Yoav Gallant, the major general in charge of the Southern Command, who said that it was their precise intention to cause the maximum number of enemy casualties.
I guess enemy means Palestinians.
Yes. I mean, they will say that's not what it means, but considering the death toll today, it's quite obvious that the people who are dying are primarily civilians. Now, the Israelis and the Americans both are claiming that the civil police are combatants. That would be like saying that traffic cops and, firemen are legitimate targets in a war. So, in fact, the majority of casualties are not in the Hamas leadership at all. They are among civilians, and women and children included.
Well, let's talk about those police officers. You had mentioned that a lot of young men are looking for employment. Gaza is very young in terms of its demographics.
Yes.
And people are looking to get jobs, dignity, a little bit of money to buy some kind of food or something. So these people were just trying to be on the duty, getting their paycheck, getting their salary.
Well, that's another reason why it's so important to point out that these people are innocent civilians. The vast majority of people who are looking for jobs as police officers, looking to join the police force there in Gaza, were doing so because unemployment has skyrocketed to something like 80%, because as anyone who has been unemployed for a long time knows, it goes with a great deal of humiliation and despair. And these people were looking not only for something to do during the day that had some meaning to them, but for a way of bringing home a paycheck. They are not ideologues. They're not people who sit in the mosques and make Hamas policies. And yet, whenever we attach the label Hamas to them, Hamas police, Hamas schools, Hamas, whatever, it justifies for the world around, people listening in the Western world, in the United States in particular, it justifies for them the killing of these people, and there's no justification for it.
Well, you were very clear about this in your article. You said that using Hamas, the media will put it before a target, put it before a name, so that we can stop thinking, basically, right?
And that's a very common tactic. And in fact, I would say that the Israeli propaganda machinery that is in place and that has been in place for many, many decades now rivals that of Joseph Goebbels in the Second World War. And if people don't like that comparison, my response is tough, because what the Israelis have managed to do is to dehumanize an entire group of people to the point where they're not even human.
You know, I caught on the latest news just today that Israel's, I don't know what her official title is, she's like the propaganda minister, I don't remember her name, but she made a disastrous television showing just recently. She was saying that the Gazans were told to leave, to disperse before the bombing, which they weren't, and the fact that there was nowhere to go. So she was caught in quite a number of falsehoods. But again, that doesn't stop a large effort at propaganda making...
Oh, no. And then one of the other very consistent lines coming out of Israel and probably out of the U.S. news, I tend to try to avoid it, but definitely in the Israeli presses and on television, is that the Hamas militants are deliberately firing rocket launchers from crowded public areas in order to do so with impunity. Well, this, first of all, as I said, when you're talking about the most densely populated area of land on the earth, it's pretty difficult to know where you can go without potentially jeopardizing people's lives. I happen to think the firing of those rockets is stupid and immoral, but I don't believe that the Hamas militants are deliberately putting them among the civilian population, any more than I did during the Lebanon War of 2006, when news reports here accused Hezbollah of the same thing, but afterwards independent investigations showed quite the contrary, that militants were going out of their way to keep free of civilian areas.
Well, there's quite a lot of parallels to Lebanon when you think about it. It seems that Israel's methodology for dealing with any problems related to Hamas or Hezbollah seems to be to do just large-scale bombing of civilian areas.
Well, yeah, there does seem to be a kind of, well, we call it disproportionate warfare. That's, you know, the understatement of the century. And we're talking about the fourth most powerful military regime on the globe, using all of its firepower against people who have primitive homemade rockets. And they are bombing and rebombing targets over and over again as if there's nothing left for them to do. One really has to wonder at what is going on in the minds of people carrying out these atrocities.
You know, when you mention the civilians and the rockets being fired from an area that's extremely concentrated in population, it really brings up the question, what is a military target? You talked about the Islamic University, right? They bombed Islamic University.
And mosques and schools, United Nations schools and religious schools. Are these all legitimate military targets? I mean, I believe fully that in the minds of the Israeli general staff, they are, because I believe also that every Palestinian is a legitimate target in their eyes. They don't come out and say it, but their actions, in fact, show it. And until that is made clear to people in the West, they're not going to believe the scale of what is happening in the Gaza Strip.
Well, as you've said, all you have to do is put Hamas before the target, so it becomes the Hamas University, Hamas School, Hamas Mosque, and so forth.
Right, and then yesterday there was a very interesting case, interesting only in the most cynical sense, of an Israeli plane that dropped, an American-made F-16 that flown by an Israeli who dropped a bomb on a truck ostensibly carrying rockets. Now, I have a friend on the ground in the Gaza Strip who works for a major human rights organization there whose job it is to go and inspect these kinds of crimes, who went to the scene and found, in fact, that the so-called rockets were oxygen containers that a family was moving from its store because the store next to it had been hit and destroyed. So the people in the truck were family members, and people outside moving equipment were just friends, bystanders, all of whom were slaughtered in a single bomb for a mistake, because there were no rockets there, and there never were any rockets there. But that will never get reported in the press here.
This is obviously tragic, and it's an atrocity. And what do we get from the U.S. now? The U.S. is condemning Hamas, right? Not
Yeah,
Israel.
Well, of course. The U.S. doesn't care, first of all, what happens to the people of Gaza, or of the West Bank, or of East Jerusalem, or of South Lebanon, or of Iraq. I mean, that's a long story. The United States very, very foolishly seems to think that this kind of operation is going to pacify Gaza and put an end to the conflicts in the Middle East. And all I can say is that they have a lot to learn.
Well, I don't know what we can be expecting in the future, but it's not good. You've said that the Israeli statements, the official statements from military personnel, have said that they want to set Hamas back, and by extension, Gaza, perhaps all the Palestinians, right?
Decades back, yes. They've already done it. I mean, you know, people are resorting to donkey carts because there isn't electricity. You know, they're resorting to kerosene lamps. You know, they have to walk in the West Bank on the most winding and lengthy trails to get to places that are reasonably close by, simply because they're cut off by checkpoints. You know, the kind of behavior that Israel is exhibiting in the territories is, you know, I don't know if there's a word for it, for pushing a society into the past so deliberately. It's a crime against humanity.
It is very frightening. Just before we go, this campaign, a large motivating factor is because they wanted to get rid of Hamas, which was democratically elected. So The Gazans are basically being punished for electing a government we don't approve of in the United States or Israel.
Yes, but don't be fooled by that. Hamas happens to be the target today. If an entirely different group of people had been elected to power who did not do the bidding of Israel, the Israelis would be doing the same thing to it today that they're doing to Gaza under Hamas. So it doesn't matter whether it's Hamas or Fatah or the PFLP or any other group, as long as it refuses to take orders from the Israeli masters, the Israelis will continue to behave like this. And that's the real tragedy of this, and that's what many people don't understand.
Well, this is very unfortunate, but and again, nonetheless, I'd like to thank you for bringing your insight and as well for working with all of those contacts you have in Gaza and elsewhere who have been bringing you this information. It's very important that we get this kind of first-hand information and this kind of analysis here in North America, because obviously, as you mentioned, we're not getting enough of it or very much of it at all from the mainstream media. If people want to get a hold of your article from this week, they can go to Counterpunch. Mm-hmm. And that would have been, what, Monday's article, if I recall?
Yeah, I think that was on Monday, and I should have one tomorrow or the next day. But there are many, many people who are really good who are writing about what's going on. And their articles, their news can be found both in the international English-speaking press, like the London Guardian and Independent, the English-speaking Daily Star of Lebanon, the Asia Times, some of the Arabic news in English, as well as on some excellent websites like the Electronic Intifada, Common Dreams, Counterpunch, Alternet. There are many, many, the Information Clearinghouse, there are many places to get very good sources of information. It's just that most people don't know about them.
Indeed. I read some of those. Asia Times, for instance, is very interesting. But I encourage our listeners to check Counterpunch for your article, Jennifer, and keep watching this week to see in case there's more articles by other people, and especially from you as well.
Thanks.
Okay, well, I'm going to take a few minutes after to mention our Gaza event that's coming up. But, Jennifer, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program today.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it, and I hope you continue to get word out and get people out there on the streets to protest this.
Thanks, Jennifer. We better put this online so we can get it out to even more people.
Great.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.